Services Committee to order. We are waiting for a few members, but we would like to get started and give our testifiers from the Health Department an opportunity to present the Governor's proposals. And so thank you for being here with us this morning, and I would invite whoever is going to testify. Commissioner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
And please inform us.
All right. Good morning, Senator Hand, members of the committee. I'm Dr. Ed Ellinger, the Commissioner of Health, and I'm here with the team from the Minnesota Department of Health, my Deputy Commissioner and Assistant Commissioners, and several of our staff to review the budget. We are glad about this opportunity because we think the programs and activities of the Health Department are really important for the state, and we'd like to identify for you the priorities that we have. And as you're well aware, in tight budget times, the budget really does focus on priorities, and I think the work that we've done over the last several months with our staff and with the governor's office really highlights the fact that this budget does reflect the priorities that we have for the Minnesota Department of Health. It reflects both the immediate needs that we have and then the long-term needs that we have for the state, because health is something that we have to kind of pay attention not to just the next quarter, the next year, the next biennium, but really down the road. And as you'll see as the staff go through the budget pages, that this helps maintain the core programs that we have at the Health Department that are really needed to protect the health of all Minnesotans. It helps to maintain the partnerships that we have with local public health and local community agencies, because it is that partnership that is unique in Minnesota and really beneficial in Minnesota to really do the work that needs to be done at a state level and at the local level. So our budget reflects that partnership. And the budget also reflects our the maintenance of effort in a lot of the prevention areas, which really we see as a benefit that will come to our children and grandchildren as we look down the road. And finally, the budget really maintains our investment in the health reform model that's unique in Minnesota. This has been something that the Health Department has been working on for several years, and with the new impetus of the Affordable Care Act and the efforts going on among multiple departments in state government, that we bring a unique perspective to health reform that helps to really focus on prevention, on health promotion, on quality, on value, on access. And so you'll see that our budget reflects this and some of the innovative things that the department has been doing over the years. And so with that, I will turn it over to Barb Julich, our Chief Financial Officer, and Craig Akam, our Assistant Commissioner for Administration, and we'll go through the budget pages for you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, committee members, good morning. For the record, my name is Craig Akam. I'm the Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Health, and with me today is Barb Julich, our Chief Financial Officer. Our hope today is to walk through the budget pages that I believe you have already in front of you. We'll try to reference the numbers as we go through them. And maybe, Mr. Chair, I'll start by talking about some of the investments in the governor's budget for our agency, and then Ms. Julich will take over and talk about some of the reductions and other spending items. So if you look in your packet of change pages on page 11, I believe, the governor is proposing to continue funding for the statewide health improvement program at $20 million a year, reduced from the current funding level of $27 million. For those of you who aren't familiar with SHIP, SHIP is an integral component of state health reform passed during the 2008 legislative session, aimed at improving the health of Minnesotans and containing the spiraling costs of health care. It accomplishes this by addressing the leading preventable causes of illness and death in the U.S., tobacco and obesity. SHIP takes a comprehensive approach to improving the policy systems and environments across communities, schools, businesses, and healthcare settings through the use of evidence-based strategies that reduce the incidence of chronic disease. SHIP moves upstream to make a lasting, widespread impact on the health of Minnesota's population, lowering the overall costs of medical care over time. SHIP works across the state with community health boards and tribal governments, engaging local community decision-making and over 1,000 partners to date. Those organizations and government partners have leveraged this state investment with local public and private resources and efforts. Another important component of SHIP is also funding for evaluation and technical assistance to ensure that these strategies are effectively implemented and that the program goals are being met. Minnesota is nation-leading in this approach to primary prevention of chronic disease, with CDC and other states looking to our example. If funding for this initiative were to end, the state would lose the momentum it has gained over the last 18 months and continue to see rising health care costs due to preventable disease. Mr. Chair,
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I sense you are done with presenting this page.
Is that right? I am.
You know, the governor's budget recommends reducing the transfer out of the health care access fund to the general fund for the people that would be going into the early MA buy-in from Minnesota Care because of the budget deficit that Minnesota Care fund faces. So wouldn't it just be a lot more transparent if this were funded on the general fund rather than taking it out of a fund that's running a deficit that we're struggling to figure out how to make whole? And I believe the governor's going to be no longer recommending any eligibility cuts, so that's a good thing. But still, I think that the future of the health care access fund is going to be in transition between now and 2014, when federal reform takes over, and this recommendation does put it in a base funding situation. So, was any thought given to that,
Mr. Aiken?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, the SHIP program is currently funded, as you're aware, out of the Health Care Access Fund,
I
think, and the governor proposed his budget. Was looking at continuing the funding from that source. However, as you know, with the updated economic forecast yesterday, the governor will be retooling his budget recommendations. I don't know that there'll be any change specifically to SHIP, but I think the governor would be open-minded to conversations with the legislature about alternate funding sources for this program if this one doesn't seem to be the right fit.
Well,
Senator Bergel.
Mr. Chairman, just a suggestion. I mean, I think everyone would have to admit that there will be a lot of major revisions and rethinking about the Health Care Access Fund as we moved into federal reform.
Thank you. Assistant Commissioner, before we leave this page, I did want to ask a little bit about on page 12, you've got some numbers that I think speak to some of the results of what we've been doing. And just so that I understand, how long have we been funding these grants, and what is the average grant size that we make out of this program?
Mr. Chair, the program has been in operation since the July of 2009. And so it has been operating for 18 months. The grants are under law, go to community health boards and tribal governments, though many of them have teamed up to create partnerships. So I believe the total number of grants is about 41, Mr. Chair. And the money is dispersed according to a competitive process based on what each individual grantee is proposing to do, and so I don't have an average award size with me today.
One of the reasons I just happened in the last couple of days to see an article, and I believe it was maybe a local community paper, not certain about that, but it was inviting people to apply to, I think it was the Bloomington department or administering a grant, and the money was for people to plant gardens. And I don't know how much of the size of the money that was being offered to people to encourage them to plant gardens, but is that envisioned as part of the what we're supposed to be doing with the funding? Is that to encourage people to plant gardens?
Mr. Chair, the SHIP program is designed to encourage local communities to make decisions about how they can best achieve change through looking at their systems, policy, and environments and with this locally based decision making. And so each community decides which from a menu of evidence-based strategies they wish to pursue, and the funding is appropriated to them accordingly. Each community is doing something different. And so I can't speak to what Bloomington might be doing, for example, but definitely they are all looking at how can we improve the quality of life and ensure that, you know, really the SHIP program isn't about making regulatory changes. Is about very much about freedom of choice and looking at local community needs. And it's addressing the problem that we've created a lot of barriers to people wanting to be healthy. And so really this is about how can we make the easy choice the healthy choice for communities around the state.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm just wondering if the department has got some way of evaluating the individual grants that are awarded to see how effective they are. And I did want to give you an opportunity to comment on the data that's on page 12 and maybe explain for the committee what we're looking at here with this data. I assume this is the progress toward targets or goals that have been established. Is that correct?
Correct, Mr. Chair. And, you know, we do have a new update that's just being prepared or finalized today that I don't have with me. But maybe I will ask our SHIP supervisor, Rachel Cohen, to join me at the table, and she can talk more in depth about some of the numbers on this page.
Sure. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, regarding evaluation.
Can I just interrupt you 1 second and encourage you to bring the microphone close? We've had some issues with the people being able to hear, so just keep the microphone close. I'd appreciate that.
Sure. Regarding evaluation, yes, the Department of Health does evaluate local grantees. For all of the strategies that Mr. Akam mentioned, the grantees are required to submit an evaluation plan 8 weeks after they were awarded the grant, so that we can see that they are evaluating, they have measurements and evaluation in place to ensure that they're on target. In addition, at a state level, we review. We're using the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, which is a statewide survey of adults, as well as the Minnesota Student Survey, which surveys our youth population. And I do believe on page 12, yes, what you have there in terms of health behavior or risk factor, I do believe is from the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System. It gives you current 2009 indications and our targets for 2013 and 2015. So that does show you the progress to date. The Youth Tobacco Survey indicates youth tobacco use. And again, you see both the history, the current, and the target. And the Minnesota Student Survey, which I just mentioned, is your bottom table, which also indicates current status of physical activity, tobacco use, and fruit and vegetable consumption, as well as our targets.
Thank you. And just to help me to understand this, and mm-hmm. this first table, the one that has the four risk factors, physical activity, fruits and vegetables, healthy weight, tobacco, how is that data accumulated? Is this a survey that is done, and so you're relying on people to voluntarily provide accurate factual information about what they're doing? Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that is correct. The Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System is a phone survey of Minnesota adults. It's random, and yes, it's self-report data.
Could you also give us, I'm assuming that the grant that grants that have been awarded have been targeted to one of these areas. I would assume that every time a person proposes a grant, they're trying to affect one of these targeted areas. Can you tell us how much of the money that we have spent in grants has gone toward each of these targeted areas since we started the grant program?
Mr. Chairman, we would have to go back and look at each individual grantee to determine their their budgets for each of their interventions. But yes, you're correct in that the menu of evidence-based strategies that Mr. Akam spoke of is compiled, and it addresses the risk factors of physical inactivity, poor nutrition, and tobacco use and exposure across four settings: the community, school, worksite, and healthcare. And so the community gardens that you spoke of earlier, you saw kind of a solicitation for community gardens in Bloomington, Edina, and Richfield. That is one strategy to increase access to fresh fruits and vegetables and to thereby increase nutrition, which thereby leads to decreased obesity and decreased healthcare costs. So it's somewhat of on a continuum.
Well, I would like to know, and I hope you can provide this, not necessarily right at the moment today, but sometime soon. I'd like to know how much money we have spent through this program on each of these categories. In other words, I think you mentioned, Assistant Commissioner Akam, that we have a current budget about $27 million. We must have had one other budget period before that that the program has been in existence. So since this program has started, we have granted money against these areas, and I would like to know the total amount of money that has been granted toward each of these target areas so that we can compare how much it has cost us to achieve the results that you're showing in the current column with the money that has been spent. So if you could provide that to the committee, I'd appreciate it.
And Mr. Chair.
Senator Benson.
These surveys appear to be statewide surveys, mm-hmm. but not every community or county is accessing grants at the same level. Is that my understanding?
Yes.
Ms. Cohen.
Yes. Mr. Chair, yes. Senator, yes.
Senator Benson.
Can we get some more granularity on this? Communities that have accessed the grants, and are they getting closer to meeting targets? Just because a number goes down doesn't mean there's causation. And one of the first examples I got in statistics was in the 1960s, we put more rockets into space and youth crime increased. Those two, one does not cause the other. They just happened at the same time. So if we had a little more granularity, I think we would have a better understanding of how effective these grants were. We can talk very much about rigorous standards and reporting requirements, but we've got a statewide survey compared to local grants, and the numbers aren't necessarily clear. So I'd appreciate some more granularity.
Thank you, Senator Benson. And yes, it would be helpful for us to have a little better understanding of this. I think given the state of the budget and concern that we all have for trying to make sure we are balancing the budget and hitting priorities, I'm trying to understand how this particular continuation of the program fits into the priorities of other things that we will be looking at for funding, and anything you can provide us that would be helpful to that, we'd appreciate.
And
go ahead, Commissioner.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Benson, you know, the other thing to keep in mind is that the SHIP program was meant or designed to be an upstream intervention for primary prevention. And it was really to head off you know, growing obesity epidemic here in Minnesota, which we have seen mushroom over 30 years. We have data and a presentation, actually, which I think dramatically shows the spread of obesity here in our state and across the nation. And, you know, really the intent was that if the SHIP program was funded to 2015, it could offset that curve of obesity and tobacco use by a small amount. I mean, 10% of adults could be moved into a normal weight. 6% could be moved to non-smoking status if we continued this funding investment. But that funding investment projects to nearly a $1.9 billion savings in healthcare costs. And so this is about reducing healthcare costs by having a healthier population, but it takes some time to make these changes happen and be implemented.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Benson.
You're talking about SHIP was started in 2009, first funding July 2009. Looking at youth tobacco, it declined from the year 2000 to 2005 without the SHIP program, and now it's at 27%. Clearway, Minnesota is doing a lot of work. I guess what I'm asking for is some proof that these programs are going to make a difference outside of other things that are being done. There are actions in private communities. There are actions in the schools. So I understand the long-term approach to bending the cost curve on health care by reducing risk factors. But physical activity increased from 50% to 52% in boys over a four-year period. It's at 54%, again, a two-year increase. Did your funding cause that 2% increase, or was that a trend that was already on its way because of actions taken prior to the implementation of SHIP? And so motivations are wonderful, but we're going to have to start looking at every part of the budget for effectivity. There are lots of different programs that are trying to improve community health, and yours is going to have to be measured with them. That's all I'm asking for. Thank you.
Senator Berglund and then Senator Newman.
Well, I did want to just mention what the assistant commissioner mentioned, that this is part of reducing health care costs. That's why it was funded. And there was some other funding for the reduction of youth smoking previous to this grant program. So, you know, that funding has been reduced substantially. I don't know if it's been completely eliminated, but it was substantially reduced to deal with other budget deficits. So that program may have had some impact on reducing youth smoking previous to this program going into place. But the communities that apply for these grants can't just propose anything. They have to propose from a list of evidence-based proven strategies that have been researched by the federal government. So, and they have to, they know when they submit the application that they will be evaluated for their outcomes. So only programs that are succeeding in reducing obesity and reducing smoking, not just among youth but among adults as well, are going to be funded or have been funded. They are aimed at systemic changes so that the change will last even if the funding goes for a different intervention in the future.
Thank you. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I just thought I'd share a very quick story with you along the lines of the Minnesota Youth Tobacco Survey. In the last couple of years, I have, for whatever reason, been the recipient of a random survey in my county regarding tobacco use and tobacco use by youngsters. And I was very curious as to, this came out of the my county health nurse, her office, and I was very curious as to what it cost. So I dug around a little bit, and each of the two surveys that I received cost $13,000. And I remember reading this survey. I filled it out. I sent it back in. And I also sent in a letter criticizing the local health nurse for sending this out, because what it really was questioning was whether or not we think smoking by our youth is bad for their health. That's what I took away from the survey. And my conclusion is, as I'm sure you can believe, we don't need a survey to tell us that. And so it to me was simply an example of maybe our funds not being used in the wisest method. And I just wanted to share that with you. That why I was chosen on two different occasions is beyond me, but I was. So.
Well, Senator Newman, maybe they were concerned that you didn't think smoking was bad for children's health. And
there was
just
a time, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner, please continue.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, you know, just to respond to that, the department, you know, is very concerned that any strategy we're using is working. And all of our surveillance tools, including these surveys, collect data to help us know the status of health of people across the state, to let us know what activities they're involved in, to let us know what trends are happening to allow us to adjust our strategies and policies and activities to meet that. So I can't speak to why you landed on that survey twice or your experience specifically with it, but you know, I just want you to I certainly want to say that the department is engaged in a lot of scientific
Mr.
work.
Chairman,
Senator Newman.
Some of the questions, for instance, that were on this survey that I received, and this is 2 years in a row, was do we think it's bad to smoke in our homes when children are present? Do we think it's bad to smoke in our automobiles when children are present? Should we eliminate smoking in public places, public parks, open spaces? Those, candidly, are not questions that, at least as I am, at least as I am concerned, I didn't need the Department of Health to send out a survey to tell me that smoking in a private automobile with children present is not good for their health. That's the point I'm trying to make.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, I don't believe that was our survey, and so I'm not sure whose survey that is, but that isn't the kind of survey we would do.
Mr. Chairman, I will tell you, and it may not, but I will tell you that the county nurse in McLeod County sent that survey out, and it had the Minnesota Department of Health on it as the original source for the survey coming out.
Thank you, and if you can, some of us have requested a little additional information. If you can help us with that, we'd appreciate it. But please continue, Assistant Commissioner.
Mr.
Senator Hahn.
Senator Sheeran.
Just while you're getting ready for the rest of your presentation, I'd be very interested in the results of that survey. I don't know if you would have access to it because so I'm surprised sometimes with questions that I assume people would take an illogical conclusion like you're describing, and sometimes those surveys reveal an ignorance that drives an educational program or concern in a county. So I'd be interested in the outcome of that survey.
Senator Newman?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sheeran, I don't have a copy of the ultimate results. I did retain copies of the actual questions and my responses. But if you wish, I suppose I could contact the county nurse in my county. Obviously, her office sent it out. I would also very honestly be surprised if the Minnesota Department of Health did not have the results of that survey because my recollection is it came from the Department of Health. I could be wrong on that, but I really believe it came from the Minnesota Department of Health, prepared as a survey and then sent out to be randomly sent out to folks.
Mr. Chair, we'll look into finding out the source of that survey.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Senators, our next item is on page 13. The governor is proposing to continue funding of $2.5 million per year beginning in fiscal year 13 for statutorily required health care reform activities authorized in the 2008 legislative session. That legislation provided funding through fiscal year 2012 for the department to collect quality of care data from physicians, clinics, and hospitals, and cost of care data from health plans. These data are used as part of the provider peer grouping system and quality data efforts as defined in statute. The information collected and analyzed provides consumers with critical information about the cost, quality, and overall value of healthcare services. Public and private payers are required to use this information to establish incentives for consumers to use higher quality, lower cost providers. Since the passage of the 2008 reforms, MDH has adopted and implemented administrative rules related to the collection of quality of care measures and cost data. These efforts are also nation-leading and will continue to yield valuable information for consumers and healthcare purchasers and payers in the future, provided analysis are updated and reported at least on an annual basis. MDH has an ongoing obligation to conduct these activities, but without the funding in this request, will not be able to continue this work after fiscal year 2012. To offset the cost in the coming biennium, the department is also proposing to transfer $2.8 million in funds from the Electronic Health Records Systems Revolving Account and Loan Program. These funds were appropriated in 2010 to provide matching funds for a federal e-health loan program that have not been made available and are not anticipated to be available. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, Assistant Commissioner, I'm glad to see that you have a source of funding for the fiscal year 2013. But again, this is coming out of the Minnesota Care base permanently. And so, again, you know, at the time that we did this, we were thinking that, you know, in the future there would be health care cost savings that could finance these operations in the future. And if there aren't, then maybe we shouldn't continue to do these activities in the future. So, again, the Healthcare Access Fund will be in a state of flux by 2014, and so I guess I'm just cautioning you about relying on that source of funding for this activity.
Assistant Commissioner.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, we do believe that these efforts that were begun in 2008 will yield savings and are a key part of our continuing health reform activities. And the nation-leading work that the department has done and the state has done on looking at cost and quality measures and providing an all-payer database, for example, of encounter claims, is going to be integral in helping us to establish the next iteration of health reform here in Minnesota in a way that's going to be beneficial to both consumers and payers.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berglund.
Don't get me wrong. I supported these things. I authored the bill. I voted for it. But again, we did do it with the idea that we would be getting results. And if we do get results, then at some point these efforts should be able to be sustained from the results that we're getting.
Commissioner, can you tell us a little bit about what the data that is collected, what is being done with it right now? Are these being made available to consumers? Is the data being made available to healthcare providers? Who has access to the data, and what is being done with it at this point?
Mr. Chair, that information is being compiled and made available to all those people that you just mentioned. The department is also working with Minnesota Community Measurement to make that available online on their website. But the information is being risk adjusted and reported in different ways. I don't know if Jim Golden is with us today, who could talk more in depth about that, but I'd be happy to provide more information.
Thank you. Please continue.
And Mr. Chair, committee members, our last investment is on page 15. The governor is proposing a $340,000 annual increase for fetal alcohol spectrum disorder grants. Currently, the department awards $1.66 million in FASD grants, and this request will increase that amount to $2 million a year to expand current efforts and support individuals and families affected by these disorders. Fetal alcohol spectrum disorders are 100% preventable, but it affects one in every 100 live births each year. Fetal alcohol syndrome represents the severe end of FASD and has an estimated national cost of $1.6 billion annually. Although there's no cure for FASD, research shows that early intervention and treatment can improve a child's development and impact long-term outcomes. This proposal increases the department's efforts to provide diagnostic services, interventions, and family support, public awareness, and professional education programs through our current grant program. Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
With that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to Barb Julek to talk through some of our agency reductions.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Barb Julek. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Health. I'll be going through the next four pages deal with four reductions for the department, starting on page 17. The first reduction deals with the elimination of the direct grants under the Merck program. Currently, three entities receive direct grants for Merck totaling $5,350,000. This proposal would eliminate these grants. These grants go to the University of Minnesota Fairview, University of Minnesota Academic Health Center, and the University of Minnesota Dental School. About $737,000 of these grants is from federal participation in this program. The remaining $4.6 million is state-funded, and elimination of these grants would therefore result in a $4.6 million savings. This proposal would take effect in fiscal year 13.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Berglund.
First, just let me say I think this is a really unfortunate reduction because these entities are helping us to generate healthcare professionals that we have and expect to have even more shortages. But my question is, will the early MA expansion be generating more Merck funding because there will be more people in the Medicaid program and some of the Merck funding is a carve-out of the Medicaid reimbursement?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, my understanding is that the Merck PMAP carve-out is a capped program. So even though the MA enrollment may grow, the PMAP piece is capped at a specific dollar amount. And so that would not change.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Julek, I thought the federal government requires us to take a certain percentage of our Medicaid spending and dedicate it to Merck. Otherwise, it would be an automatic portion of the MA dollar.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, I believe the federal government required a cap to be put on that, and that was implemented 2009 session or 10 session. It was implemented a few years ago.
This is an unfortunate budget page.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, moving on to the second page, this also deals with Merck. Page 18, this proposal transfers the fund balance from the Merck fund to the general fund. This fund balance is based on two funding issues. The first is a $8.4 million continual roll forward that has been existent in the fund for a few years. And the second would transfer $1.4 million of unallocated dental innovation grants that have accumulated over the last few years for a total of a $9.8 million transfer from the Merck Fund to the General Fund for a one-time savings. Okay, continuing on, the third reduction on page 19 deals with federally qualified health centers. This proposal eliminates a one-time funding for federal qualified health centers that was in the Healthcare Access Fund while maintaining the base funds of $2.5 million in the general fund. So this does not reflect a reduction to those grants, just the elimination of a one-time increase. And, Mr. Chair, the final reduction on page 20 reflects the department's operating reduction for general fund, healthcare access fund, and TANF funds. In the general fund, this represents a 5.5% reduction to the department's operating budget. In the healthcare access fund, reductions include the elimination of data collections for the physician clinic financial and statistical data report, a prescription drug spending and rebate data collection, and a retrospective review of capital expenditures. And in the TANF fund, the reduction reflects the coordination of two separate training and evaluation efforts for the TANF programs by combining them into one evaluation and training program. Mr. Chair, if there are no questions, I'll continue. The next three pages deal with our fee programs under the State Government Special Revenue Fund. The first one on page 21 deals with the well program. This proposal modifies current fees for the construction of new wells, well sealing, and well disclosures at the time of property transfers, and also creates a new renewal fee for certified representatives of licensed well or boring contractors. This proposal would increase the fees and appropriate those fees to the department to allow the department to meet its current requirements for drinking water safety. Mr. Chair, the next page on page 23 is also with the well program, a proposal for a new fee for board geothermal heat exchanger. This proposal changes the current statute definition of heat exchanger systems from a vertical heat exchanger to a board geothermal heat exchanger. This will allow the inclusion of angle boring machines that are currently being used to install heat loop exchangers to be licensed and regulated through the department. The fee would be deposited into the state government special revenue fund and appropriated to the department. Mr. Chair, if no questions on that page, continuing to the third change on page 25. This proposal would create a new fee program in the state government special revenue fund for the expansion and modernization of the current indoor sports arena certification program to include assessing of current health risks, modernization of air monitoring standards, complaint follow-up, and research and education of best practices on indoor quality issue. Currently, the department runs a small program out of the general fund of about $40,000. This proposal would shift that program into a fee-based program, implementing fees on annual certification fees on arenas and special event fees to cover the cost of the program. The $40,000 in general fund is also part of the operating reduction page from a few pages ago, so that's embedded in that page as well.
Senator Sharon.
May I ask to go backwards? I'm sorry. I'm just reading something over and over again. I'm trying to understand its implications. So with your generous, on page 20, I'm sorry to go back, under a proposal that reduces the health care access fund by $213,000 a year. Reduction includes three reports. Would you tell me what we will not be receiving, what information, provider financial and prescription drug disclosure? These reports were driven by a need to examine something that we won't be seeing. Can you help me understand the implications of us losing these reports?
Ms. Julek.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, on the prescription drug and spending rebate data, this is data we collect to be made available to the public, but we have yet to receive one request for this information, so we're recommending to stop collecting the information.
You have yet to?
Senator Sharon.
Yet to receive any request from the public for the information.
I see. Okay.
On the retrospective review of capital expenditures, being it's a retrospective review, the department has found little benefit in that collection of information, and so again, we're recommending elimination of that. And the physician clinical financial and statistical data, I might have to get back to you, but my notes on here say we have found limited use for this information internally, and therefore recommending elimination of it, but I could get more information back to you on that one.
I appreciate that.
Thank you. Ms. Julek, other questions?
Mr. Chair, I think we are moving to the department's clean water legacy amendment proposals. We have five proposals for the use of these funds. Two of them are continuing current programs, and three would be new proposals. Starting at page 27, the drinking water contaminants of emerging health concern. This proposal continues funding that the department received beginning in fiscal year 10 for drinking water contaminants of emerging concern and expands the department's capacity for developing and implementing water analysis for emerging contaminants, analyzing risks from exposure to contaminants of concern, and communicating these results of these activities to the public and other public health and environmental protection programs. Page 29 is also a continuation of funding that we received 2 years ago. We continue activities regarding source water protection to accelerate the development and implementation of wellhead or surface water intake protection plans, improve data sharing with external partners so that all plans can be completed within 10 years, which is an accelerated pace compared to the current process, and expand the level of technical assistance provided to public water suppliers relating to source water protection. Mr. Chair, beginning on page 31 is the first of our new proposals for this funding source. The County Well Index and Well Water Risk Evaluation proposal. This proposal provides funding for the enhancement of the current County Well Index to begin converting it from a well site database to an informational resource for the public on drinking water in their community. And the second part of this proposal provides funding for the department to develop a methodology for designating public health risks related to human and natural impacts on drinking water. Continuing on to page 34, the well ceiling cost share proposal. This proposal would provide grant funds to assist with sealing the cost of sealing private and public wells. Unsealed wells can pose a threat to groundwater by allowing contaminants to bypass natural geological protections. It's estimated there are about 500,000 unsealed, unused wells in Minnesota. This proposal would provide a cost share grant program, providing a 50-50 cost share for the sealing of public and private wells. It is assumed that half the grants will be for private well sealing and half will be for public well sealing. Criteria would be established to rank funding requests based on public health and environmental risks. Finally, Mr. Chair, the last page on page 35, GPS location of wells and arsenic testing. This proposal would create standards for using global positioning systems or GPS to locate all wells constructed and sealed in Minnesota. Currently, licensed well contractors are required to submit locations of wells and borings that they construct and seal. Satellite-based GPS provides the most accurate location information, and this proposal would provide funding for GPS equipment, maintenance, and training for all well contractors. The second part of this proposal would focus on arsenic testing for new wells. Drilling of a new well can alter the geochemistry around the well, making it possible that arsenic levels in newly constructed wells could change over time. This proposal would sample 120 newly constructed wells since August of 2008, but older than 6 months, and compare the arsenic results with samples collected when the wells were first drilled. If a significant change has occurred, supplemental testing would be performed to help characterize the cost of the funding. All of these Clean Water Amendment proposals are requested for 2 years of funding, which has been the tradition. When this started 2 years ago, all appropriations were 2 years only, with the idea of coming back to the legislature to request renewal funding. And so that's what you see on the pages, is 2 years of funding.
And thank you, Ms. Chula. Can you just clarify, for me at least, maybe others, but are these costs and budget impacts, are they within the jurisdiction of this committee, or do they also go into what, the Environment Committee, or where is the jurisdiction for this? Do we know precisely?
Mr. Chair, you know, I don't know that we know the answer to that. In the House, for example, they have a separate committee that's dealing with legacy funding. I don't know if that's the intent of the Senate or whether to allow each division to pursue funding recommendations individually.
Well, we'll have to do a little checking on that. I appreciate that. Could you also, you were reviewing some of these fee programs. I think there were three or four of them. Mm-hmm. And as I understand it, you were proposing that there be some funds appropriated to manage the activity, and I'm assuming fee increases as well. Can you give us roughly the total amount that is, what is the amount of fee dollars that is going to be raised by all the changes that you've recommended?
Sure, Mr. Chair. We have three fee proposals that we went through. Let's see. On an annual basis, we are requesting an increase of fees of $700,000.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just to give an overall review, the governor's budget proposal proposes about $21.3 million of savings, of which about $17 million is from the general fund. It also proposes about $15 million of investments, but of those investments, $46 to $47 million is continuing current activity. It's not new activity. It's continuing our current programs, and about $4 million is newer expanded activity.
Just to make sure I heard, the fee programs, you said the total was $700,000?
$750,000 annually being proposed for new fees.
Okay.
And that's the three pages. $300,000 for modifying current fees of the well program, $150,000 for a new fee on the well program for the geothermal heat exchanger, and then $250,000 for the enclosed sports arena, which would be a new program.
And Mr. Chair, the Department of Health has a number of regulatory responsibilities under the law. We carry those out typically with a fee model on the regulated communities. And so the fees we charge equal the cost of the activity, and we rebalance those about every 4 to 5 years based on our experience and our projections of the cost of those activities to continue. And so these are self-sustaining, continuing activities to meet the laws and requirements of the agency as under statute.
Thank you. One other question, just, and I, you didn't mention it in your presentation, but is there also movement to reduce the overall administrative cost of the health department in the governor's proposal? And if so, can you talk about that? I don't know if that's a change that is contemplated or being introduced someplace else, but I was thinking that there was going to be general reductions in administration across all the departments. But
yeah, Mr. Chair, I draw your attention to page 20, the operating budget reductions. Those are administrative reductions to the agency. And the department has been continuing to do administrative reductions over time. Over the last 3 or 4 years, we've reduced our administrative budget by 18%. This represents another 5.5% reduction to our base general fund for the administration of the agency. We've been using a number of strategies, certainly partnering with other organizations and local governments. We've been implementing quality improvement processes within the department. Lean, for example, has been something that our department and others have been using to streamline our processes and make things more efficient. And so we would continue that trend under the governor's proposal.
Thank you. I remember presenting that, but I guess I didn't make the connection. That's you're also reducing about 3 FTEs as well. Is that the
Mr. Chair, the page does reflect a reduction of 3 FTEs from our base funding, but there's also an additional $1 million reduction that's not yet tied to FTEs because it was basically new funding that we're giving up.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, that actually concludes our change pages. Not nearly as numerous as the Department of Human Services, but we'd be happy to answer any other questions about the governor's proposed budget or our agency's activities.
Is there any questions from the committee? I guess the only question that I would like to ask at some point to have you come back or someone come back and talk a little bit about is I'm interested in understanding the oversight activities that the department conducts on medical facilities. I think I briefly had a conversation with the commissioner about this sort of offline, but given some of the recent news in other places about oversight in facilities that conduct abortions, I wanted to have some information presented to the committee about what the Department of Health's role is in Minnesota with respect to that issue, just what kinds of oversight activities have been conducted or what the status of those inspections might be. Just as a way of understanding or assuring, I guess, us and the public that we are not going to have a similar kind of concern that was, I guess, uncovered recently in another place. So if you could think about that and let us know when you'd be prepared to come back and share that, we'd appreciate it.
Okay. Mr. Chair, we'd be happy to do that.
Okay. Senator Sharon.
I'm remembering that there was a expose on that on television. Where was that?
Senator Sharon, I believe that was in Philadelphia,
about
a month or so ago, where they had a facility that had supposedly been under somebody's regimen of inspection but had never happened or had been happening irregularly. And it was obviously something very tragic, but I just wanted to make sure that whatever we're doing in Minnesota is being sufficiently scrutinized and inspected that we would not have anything similar happen.
Senator Hand, that I'm thinking of that story, but it's sort of like it was an outpatient surgery center or something like that. It was an outpatient clinic where outpatient procedures were conducted. So, you know, that one was specific to abortion, but there are plenty of procedures that are done on an outpatient basis like that that the overall standard of the outpatient surgery center or whatever the outpatient clinic system is that allows for that it would be a review process. What is the review process for any outpatient procedure, I'm assuming you're asking about?
And Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, I don't have those answers with me today, but we'd be happy to provide a more comprehensive overview of the department does oversee healthcare facilities, a variety of which from long-term care to hospitals, and so certainly be happy to have the folks that do that work in our agency come and talk about which facilities they inspect and oversee, which ones are licensed, how that process works.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Other questions? I think at this point, then, thank you for coming today and reviewing the governor's budget proposals with us. We are likely going to have a further opportunity to talk with you about other issues in the future, but we appreciate your willingness to be here today. And if we have further questions on the budget as we move forward in the next few weeks, we certainly will call you to get your advice and counsel. But thanks again for being here. And members, we are planning to meet again tomorrow. We're going to continue with the Department of Human Services presentation of the governor's budget proposals. And I'm anticipating that that will extend into Friday. It's possible we could finish that tomorrow, but we want to at least anticipate that if it doesn't, we have time on Friday morning for the committee to meet. All right. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.